Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
Our guest is Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service providing insider news and knowledge to investors. His website, CanadianInsider.com, home of the Canadian Insider Club. You can find him on X at InkResearch. Welcome back to the show, Ted.
Jim, thanks for having me back, and thanks for everyone tuning in.
What's going on the energy front?
Well, it's been a pretty good quarter for energy investors. You know, there was a lot of hype as we entered the summer about AI. Do you remember that, Jim? How AI is going to change the world, and perhaps it will eventually. But investors really got kind of carried away. And we wrote in the early summer, you know, a number of pieces about, you know, how energy was really unloved, washed out, insiders were buying, and for those who follow me on Twitter, on X, now called X, I tweeted out on Thursday, I retweeted a report that via our VivaVille a Discord server that you can pick up for free, July 14th morning report, where it was titled "Insiders Positioned for a Narrowing of the Technology Energy Value Gap." Okay, so it was basically, kind of long story short, we were saying energy's basically way too expensive, and technology is way too expensive, and energy is very inexpensive on a valuation basis, and this gap has to narrow. Okay, and so we looked at a stock, and that stock actually turned out to be the number one ranked stock in our energy top 30 for September. And so we've tweeted about that, and you can go to my Twitter feed to pick that up. But the report from July 14th, and basically, you know, this stock that we wrote about on July 14th, it's a Canadian gas stock. I mean, it is absolutely crushed it. It's up, as of yesterday, it was up over 40% for the quarter, and NVIDIA was struggling to stay flat, and Apple was down for the quarter, you know, as of yesterday. So we've had a very good run here for energy, and the question is, of course, is this going to last? Well, you know, we have seen a fair amount of profit taking by insiders, you know, on this sector. So I think one now has to be a lot more careful in terms of adding to positions. You know, if you're going to add, I think you've got to be picky, and you know, you've got to got to be mindful of what the plans are of the company and where it's producing and what its what its production is geared towards: natural gas, oil, you know, condensate. I mean, all those types of factors you have to look at. What kind of grades of oil does it have? Where is that oil going? I mean, all these factors are going to come into play at different times, you know, over the next year or so. So depending on your time horizon, right, that could matter. So it's still a very, very exciting time, I think, in the oil patch. Just a company by company type of environment now, where you can look at some attractive opportunities company by company. And of course, we follow the insiders to give us hints as which companies those may be. When we, as I mentioned, we published our top 30 just on Thursday, and we'll be doing the same for our mining report on Friday. So it was a strong end to the quarter for energy. It's been a good quarter. So you know, maybe the fourth quarter is going to be a little tougher, a little bit more on the stock selection. We will see. We'll see where oil goes, of course. Hard to predict. I know there's a lot of chatter about $100 oil, so that has me a bit concerned that it's probably due for a rest for a while, and it may well get over 100, but it might do it when people are least expecting it. So we will see. But it's been a really encouraging quarter for those of us in the Canadian equity market, who had to sit there and see this technology story eclipse everything, suck capital out, you know, from every corner of the globe into, you know, a handful of stocks that became extremely overvalued, in my opinion, and some of them are still highly overvalued. So I don't think that story is ended by any stretch of the imagination, even if the energy sector has a period to rest after this run. I suspect that there's still work to do on bringing the broad technology sector in the United States evaluations down to, you know, some level of where I think you could rationally say they make sense, and we may not be that far from there, but there's still work to do, I think.
Now, stock markets around the world, how do they rank or compare to the U.S. and Canadian markets? Is money going to the U.S. market because people just trust it more than what's happening elsewhere, or what's happening elsewhere?
Well, I mean, we focus primarily on North America, and so we don't look directly at foreign markets. We of course are very mindful, and we want to assess that very question that you've just asked, right? Like in Canada, we've been in this, you know, pretty much for over a decade, with you know, pockets of exceptions. Capital has avoided Canada, the Canadian market, Canadian stock market, and gone into U.S. technology. And that's been our biggest problem. I think, you know, in terms of developing new mines and getting, look at the valuations in the energy sector are still quite low. Even, you know, really, some really good companies are still very low. So I think the U.S. market's been the big gorilla in the room. It's not like everyone's been fleeing to emerging markets with their capital and buying, you know, stocks in Indonesia, right? That's not been the challenge for us in Canada. And I think, though, that the U.S. story has been hinged so heavily on tech that, you know, it's due for... just on mean reversion, you know, mean reversion is, you know, eventually, you know, relationships head back to the average if once they've departed from that average for a long period of time, either above the average or below the average. And we've had such a huge weighting to American assets. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And part of it is structural, but we're seeing part of that unwind now this is a very controversial statement, but it can be debated, but the diminishing role of the U.S. dollar globally, and to be clear, that does not mean the renminbi is going to take, you know, is challenging it as a reserve currency. It does not mean there's going to be a BRICS currency. It just means that as other countries become bigger in the global economy, they are learning how to conduct trade in their own currencies. They're stocking up on commodities. They're just holding less U.S. dollars. Oh, and by the way, just in case, you know, we do something that the Americans aren't that happy with or the Europeans aren't that happy with, we don't want to have our treasuries frozen, you know, under sanction, right? So there's a whole bunch of reasons why the U.S. dollar is diminishing, right? And it's not because the renminbi is going to take over, no. And it's not because any one particular currency is going to take over. I mean, this is, we hear this from the, you know, the dollar bulls get very sensitive about this issue. But unfortunately, it's not because there's a big you know, gorilla that's about to come in the room and have a knockout contest. It's not that at all. It's basically just the system, the system is changing because you've got so many countries who are diversifying. So to get back to your question, I would suspect that, you know, you're going to have more and more countries starting to outperform the U.S. market over, you know, the next, say, 5 years, but that's not going to be every country. There's going to be countries that continue to underperform, rightly so. It's going to be a, you know, a gradual shift. It's going to be very volatile because of all the distortions that the Bernanke era brought into capital markets globally, when you basically get rid of the risk-free rate for like a decade. That has consequences when you decide you're going to price fix the cost of money for a decade. That has consequences when you decide you're going to have negative yielding sovereign debt for over a decade. That has consequences. These consequences are going to be unwound, and it's not entirely pretty here. I mean, we see that this year. I mean, it's been a tough road. You know, if you think you were riding high, if you were in AI stocks in Q2, well, that ride, you know, took a turn in Q3. Where is it going to go in Q4? We don't know. We think that the mining group should be next in line for a bump here. Will it be Q4 this year? Will it be Q1? Will it be Q2 next year? I don't know, because there's so many distortions that you just have to kind of wait your turn, and it's very painful because it's so risky that you can have drawdowns along the way. Now the nice thing is that we've departed from the Bernanke era, and it's amazing how many professional money managers, most of them are under the age of 50, but not all, think we're going back. You know, we think we're that having 10-year bond yields lower than the overnight rate is a normal thing. No, it is not a normal thing. It is not normal to see 10-year bond yields below the one-year rate on T-bills. That is abnormal. That is Bernanke abnormalism, okay? And that era is mercifully over. Now, I read somewhere the Bank of England has hired Ben Bernanke to look at inflation management or something. I go, my goodness. I mean, that tells you really all you need to know about the problems with central planning when it comes to monetary policy, and how, you know, as Westerners, as people who believe in, you know, so-called, you know, liberal democratic societies, and I use the word liberal in terms of the classical sense, not in the terms of the modern sense, we have some work to do in the Western democracies to kind of fix a few institutions, including central banking, monetary policy management, and the list goes on from there. But we'll keep the list short, so we'll just stick to that. And you know, I don't see that happening yet, but maybe in the next few years. In the meantime, though, we can be thankful that the Bernanke era is in the rearview mirror, and let us hope and pray it never comes back.
How long do you think these higher interest rates will be around? Are they going to stay where they are, moderate a little bit, but still stay much higher than they used to be?
Well, I think there's two scenarios. Basically, if the U.S. can pull it off and keep the economy's got some momentum, if they can get inflation under sort of stable here, they may be able to do what the Fed is hoping to do and cut rates a little bit on the short end. The short end being, you know, under, you know, the overnight rate that will impact the one in, you know, maybe the 6, 12, 24-month part of the yield curve. they may be able to pull that off. That's the optimistic scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I'm skeptical. I think there's too many consequences from the Bernanke madness period that have yet to be addressed, because they just pop up, and we don't always know what they're going to be. And I think they're going to continue to pop up. So I think it's going to be very difficult to pull off that scenario. I think there's chances that they may cut rates thinking they've won on inflation, then it comes back. And it may also be that they will try to cut rates, but as soon as they do, the dollar starts to fall, and that has a whole sort of other problems. So I think we're not going back to the – I'll be shocked within 2 years if the Federal Reserve overnight rate is at 2%. I will be shocked. I don't see that happening, and I certainly don't see sort of the middle part of the bond curve, sort of that, and which is very, you know, I think important for Canada and Canadians. If you think the 5-year bond yield in Canada is peaked, I hope you're right. I'm not so sure.
We'll have more with Ted Dixon right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Ted Dixon. Ted, what's going on with gold?
Well, the U.S. dollar, right? I mean, that's been a big frustration for gold investors. And, you know, I think, you know, this really began to take off sort of at the end of July. And what I think the catalyst was, in fact, this sort of China gloom, and combined with Japan sticking with its, you know, negative interest rate policy and its really slow approach to getting out of yield curve control, where they're limiting yields on the 10-year bond. And that combination really put a bid under the U.S. dollar, because the weak Japanese yen, it basically forced the renminbi, the Chinese currency, down. They both they compete with each other in export markets. So long as you've got a weak yen, it's going to be hard for the renminbi to stabilize. And that is something we honestly didn't see coming this summer, that kind of a pivot here on the renminbi and the yen. And that's kind of really, I think, been a catalyst for the U.S. dollar. Now, I know there's a lot of chatter about, well, the 10-year bond yield's going up, and that's helping the U.S. dollar, perhaps, but they do, in a sense, work together. The U.S. government needs to fund its deficit. Higher 10-year yields do attract more capital. A lower dollar can also attract more capital. At some point, they will probably have to move together. I think you will see a switch where you'll see the bond yields going up and the U.S. dollar going down. Now, why is that? Well, you know, basically, as we're going to talk about in our gold report that will be out on Friday, you know, basically, you've got two situations with high interest rates in the U.S. You've got an attractive situation, which I would suggest we're kind of at right now, where the market believes, well, growth is good, and the Fed is fighting inflation, which means like real yields are high. The difference between where the interest rates are and where the inflation rate, as market participants believe the inflation rate to be, is. So, you know, basically the bigger the difference between the inflation rate and the interest rate, you know, the better it is for investors in terms of the U.S. dollar, because that means it's really attractive. You're getting a premium, a real yield, and that's a good thing, you know, as an investor, right? It's a bad thing for gold, because that will encourage investors who hold gold to sell some of their gold and buy U.S. Treasuries with that real yield. Okay, but there's a problem with that happy combination there between, you know, sort of high rates and low inflation, and that is the U.S. banking system. It's still looking pretty wobbly in terms of share prices. And so there's a limit, in our view, as to how much more the Fed can actually raise rates. And I'm surprised, in a sense, that they've been able to get away with raising them this much. Now, they played some tricks by bringing in some stimulative money printing measures to support the banks. It's kind of in the back door in March. But in any event, they've managed to keep the rates up, and for investors, you know, that's been an attractive proposition. However, what would not be such a good path for those high rates is if those high rates are needed to fund the deficit, in the sense that they need the rates, whether they want them up or not, to attract money to fund their bonds. And the other not so pretty trip for the high rates in the U.S. would be if they are going up because of the need to fund the deficit, but they're not going up fast enough to keep up with inflation. I don't think we're there at that point, but that's something to watch. But so basically, right now, we've kind of had this kind of narrative in the market. Well, isn't the U.S. a great place to be because they've raised rates? It's higher than inflation. Inflation's under control. Who needs gold? We'll just pile into these U.S. treasuries. But that story, I think, has limits because of not only the banking situation, they can only let rates go up so high, but there's also this huge amount of treasuries that have to be funded, and that's probably going to require a lower U.S. dollar at some point. And it hasn't so far, but I think we're getting pretty close to that point where a higher U.S. dollar, foreigners are just going to go, oh, wait a minute, if I buy these U.S. treasuries, how much higher can the U.S. dollar go? I'm going to lose on the currency. I'll just wait. I'll wait until the U.S. dollar comes down, then we'll buy it. Then we'll buy our treasuries. So, you know, I think we're getting near there. Does it happen this quarter? Perhaps. Does it happen next year? Perhaps. You know, again, we're kind of in this wait and see mode, but this is one of the consequences, you know, that we have again from the Bernanke era, that he made it so cheap for governments to issue debt that there's so much on the U.S. balance sheet now, the Treasury balance sheet, that with these higher rates, it's just being compounded, and the interest costs are just growing substantially. So it's, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but now the interest costs are, like, they're rivaling the defense budget. I mean, it's just an amazing transformation of U.S. government spending, and these cannot be reduced, right? Interest payments on the U.S. government debt, you know, unless assuming that the U.S. government's not going to default on its debt, I don't think it will in that sense. They're not going to say, oh, we're not paying you, or I'm going to pay you 50 cents on the dollar. They're not going to do that. No way. They're going to pay, but the interest on that is becoming more and more a part of the budget, and that can't be cut by the Congress. Like, the Congress cannot say, we're not going to pay the interest. They're going to have to pay the interest, no matter. And so this deficit is not going to be cut in any substantial way, because interest now is such a big component of it, defense is such a big component of it, and there is still a war going on, and the U.S. is a big part of that war as a you know, supplier to the Ukraine, and you've got Social Security. So good luck to any politician who's going to run on cutting benefits. I mean, look, let's look at Canada. I mean, the polls have come out, and the conservatives are winning with every age group except one. And who's that? They're not winning. They're the older people over 65. Well, why would that be? Well, one reason I think is because some of them probably still remember that Stephen Harper floated the idea, you know, of sort of cutting back some pension benefits a few, you know, about a decade ago, and you know that's like not a winning political strategy, and most politicians understand that now. And so I think it's going to be you're going to need a crisis before that can ever be touched, and a big crisis, and it would have to be a super huge crisis. So I don't see the U.S. deficit, you know, significantly coming down. Yes, you'll have bumps here and there, up and down, but the trend is not your friend in this case. So the U.S. dollar here, I think, is, you know, pretty much dead end, dead ahead for the U.S. dollar. We don't know how close this dead end is. It's a bit foggy, the markets right now, you know, because of, again, all these Bernanke, you know, era consequences that are kind of delivering the smog in front of us here that makes it really hard to see exactly how far ahead this dead end is.
Do you think if the Conservatives are the government in Canada, they'll bring back the idea of 68 as the retirement age instead of 65?
I'll be shocked if they run on that.
Well, I'm not saying they're going to run on it. I'm saying, are they going to do it without telling us that's their plan?
I doubt it. Who knows? I mean, who knows? Again, if you had a crisis, who knows? But I doubt it. And I think that any political party will do anything they can to avoid doing that until the very last baby boomer, you know, that is departed from this planet, then maybe they will do it. But, you know, right now, seniors are such a big voting block. I just can't see any government doing that unless, you know, there's a massive crisis. And, Now, you know, I mean, if you could get a really good marketer in and say we're doing this because everybody's healthier and everything is great, you know, maybe you could pull it off. But I don't think so. I think that's DOA that unless it's a last resort.
Ted, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
Yeah, keep watching the gold silver ratio. It's, you know, we were close to it breaking down about a month ago, and it zoomed right back up on this sort of dollar euphoria. And so I'm watching that. I'm also watching U.S. Money Center bank shares very closely. You know, they've been looking weak. If they start to make new lows, then the gold and silver ratio falls, you know, below 78, then I think the mining boom that, you know, that we've been waiting for, it will be on, you know, that will be its quarter to outperform everything. We're not there yet, but things can happen very fast. When they do happen, that's why I think you got to keep mindful of it. And certainly, you know, we're watching that in our reports, and we keep our members updated on how we're seeing things right now. And but yeah, it's watch, wait, and look for a stock specific situations, whether it's an oil and gas, lithium, you know, mining. You know, you got to be, I think, to take rifle shots right now. And you know, that also I would say applies to the uranium space, where you've got a bit of a euphoria right now. I think you have to be very, very picky in terms of the names you're looking at, because uranium is a complicated industry, and they're, you know, I think it once sort of you get past sort of this early euphoria stage where everything catches a bid, you'll start, the winners and losers will start to separate pretty quickly. So, you know, we covered there's a couple of stocks that have made our screens, good uranium or focused companies are difficult to find because there aren't that many of them. So it's a small group, and they've had to wait a long time for this kind of renewed interest. So congratulations to those, you know, uranium investors who suck it out, and your day is, I think, is finally here. And it should, you know, it should persist, right? Like the uranium space, there's a case for it. But again, it's a complicated case, and it's we haven't yet quite got monetary stimulus that you would need to sort of make everything fly up, but it's improving. You're starting to see some some central banks are starting to sneak monetary stimulation into the market, so that'll help the uranium group. But our preference would be to take rifle shots with that group as well, along with just about everything. Stock selection really critical, and let's all pick our spots wisely here.
Ted, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thanks for having me back, Jim.
My guest has been Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service. Find him online at CanadianInsider.com. Also on X at InkResearch. If you have any questions for Ted or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of House Street Media Incorporated.